you find yourself drifting through space. You look out and you see a nebula. But then you realize you're in an office filled with many books and an empty desk. You pick up the book on the desk and the title says Dreamscape. Within this sea of black, within this void full of stars, I feel alone. I feel this confusion. I feel anxiety. I don't understand what happened. Dear one, we're back. It's happening. And it is wondrous, yes, but it seems to be at the expense of others. Dear reader, I'm not sure if you can understand. I'm not sure if anybody is listening, but know this. You are loved, but sometimes I can't feel my own love. I can barely see my hand in front of my face, let alone love. But somewhere out there, though, is a place for me, the traveler. Somewhere for me and only me. Somewhere perhaps in Dreamscape. Sometimes I question if the wormhole that we went through was even worth it in hindsight. Sometimes I wonder if little Pixie, the astral fox, is still with me. Where are you, dear one? Because I can't see my hand in front of my face now. I'm tired. I'm so tired. The kind of tired that sleep cannot fix. Tired from the carrying of boundless loads of the universe upon my back. I'm tired of people being so singular rather than plural. I hope this finds you well. But still, the shadows, they whisper to me. Thirsty or just alone, madam? In which I respond, yes, my old friend. I feel something stirring within me now, slowly but surely. Hello, dear one. Can you hear me? Where have you sent us? Far past familiar territory, I'm sure. But I feel at home in this strange area of space, in this dreamscape. But alas, I digress. As always. And thus the passage in the book ends. Hello, dear ones. I do hope everybody has had a great week. I am sorry about the lack of content the past few weeks. I was going through a lot, and I'm just now able to get everything started again. So this week we are talking about the idea of memory self-efficacy. I may have mentioned this idea before. It's actually the subject of my personal research into recovery times of stroke patients and how memory self-efficacy correlates with better treatment outcomes. It is a new but growing idea in the field of cognitive psychology specifically. Think of it in part as the watchman watching the watcher. Or, for another example, you watching your own thoughts and cognitive processes. This may also relate to internal introspection, which we have talked about before on here. So what is memory self-efficacy? Well, the idea first came in 1989 with research by Herzog, Holt, I'm going to butcher these names and I am sorry, and Dixon. But it's the belief about one's own capability to use memory effectively in various situations. Since that idea was first introduced, it has gathered much steam in the cognitive psychology department. For instance, Payne, another researcher, and others, in 2011, redid the definition. They say that memory self-efficacy is the belief in the effectiveness of one's own memory function. Since we now know what it is, we can assess the relationship between memory self-efficacy and other aspects. In this research paper, again by Payne in 2011 and other researchers, it measured the responsiveness to inductive reasoning training in adults. As a reminder, inductive reasoning is broad generalizations from observations. In this paper, participants completed a measure or a test of self-efficacy, assessing their own belief about their memory capability. The results were inductive reasoning showed clear improvements in the training group compared with the control group. Memory self-efficacy beliefs predicted change in inductive reasoning, and higher capacity beliefs showed greater responsiveness to intervention. So, in short, results indicate that a self-referential belief about cognitive potential may be an important factor for neuroplasticity in adulthood. To give another example, another article by McDougall and Kane divided groups into high and low memory self-efficacy score groups. The higher memory self-efficacy group were, on average, younger compared to the lower. Memory self-efficacy was found that it influences aging males in their perceptions of their own cognitive performance and how it is related to memory. So, now that all the boring science is out of the way, how does it relate to our poem? And with our friends, Pixie and the Traveler, Luna. It would seem that at times our traveler thinks she knows which way to go and what to do until something happens. We've seen this time and time again in the poems. She goes through great lengths to judge her own mental abilities to get through a situation. She's often confused by this, and it gives her great cognitive dissonance. Though it is quite funny, she doubts herself until something peculiar happens. I wouldn't understand the term memory self-efficacy or even be aware of it until later in my life. aka more recently. But the idea of memory self-efficacy, or being able to be cognitive of your own thoughts and beliefs about yourself, within that, meditation is also a useful tool. As one meditates, you'll oftentimes see these intrusive thoughts, the thoughts that seem to come and go. Most of them have to do with yourself, which they may be self-depreciating in nature, but from personal experience, I used to have so much negative internal talk and beliefs and hate for myself and in my own capabilities. Through meditation, though, in hindsight, I was able to produce higher memory self-efficacy with practice and training. Because once you start meditating, you start to learn how to weed out those negative thoughts. The I don't know if I can's. All that relates from anxiety, from past experiences. And one can't live in the past all the time. So, memory self-efficacy is about living in the now, being confident in the now and your own capabilities. But later in life, also more recently, I would start school. I would view yet another increase in my memory self-efficacy. For myself at least, I have correlated higher educational attainment with higher memory self-efficacy levels. Not formally measured, of course, just a generalization. But that's just a short reflection on how memory self-efficacy relates to me. So, I know this section has been a little flaky, and I am sorry for that, but I'm trying to get better at it. But it's time for this episode's Highlighted Psychologist, who is Leta, L-E-T-A, Hollingworth, who was born on May 25th, 1886, and died November 27th, 1939. She was an early pioneer in psychology, known for her work and research into giftedness or exceptional children, psychology of women, clinical psychology, and educational psychology. She was born in Nebraska. Her early life was very rough. Her mother died upon giving birth to her third child. The father abandoned the family and left the children to be raised by their mother's parents. And apparently 10 years later, he came back to reclaim the children, which he had a parental right to do so at the time. She experienced an abusive household full of alcoholism and emotional abuse. So, in order to deal with this, her coping mechanism and refuge became education and exploring her talents as a writer. The second that she graduated high school, she did leave home and enrolled in University of Nebraska at Lincoln when she was only 16. She began her career and her life as a teacher, but she moved to New York with her husband, Harry Hollingworth, in 1908, because he wanted to complete his doctorate degree. However, because New York didn't allow married women to teach high school at the time, she got bored and enrolled in Columbia University and earned her master's degree in education in 1913. Her job right after that was the clearinghouse for mental defectives, where she did research into intelligence using the Binet scale. She did continue her psychology education and actually studied under the famed psychologist Edward Thorndike. Her specialties included research on women and research into gifted children. Her research in women challenged the notion that men, at the time, had more intellectual variation than women. She found that it is not due to an innate difference, but societal ones. She also challenged the belief, and ladies, you are going to laugh at this, she challenged the belief that menstruation incapacitated women completely. The idea at the time played a major role into women's rights, since employees didn't hire women because they believed women would be incapable of performing their duties for about 1 week out of the month. She found zero performance differences in this. Her research with gifted children found that educational services often neglected the gifted students because educators and parents believed that these gifted children could simply take care of themselves. She suggested, however, that it was important to create a curriculum for these children to stimulate their minds specifically. But that was the highlighted psychologist for this episode. Thank you for listening. Hope you learned something. Thank you for listening to the episode. I would like to give everybody an update on what may be going on in the future. Well, rather, what will be going on in the future. November 10th, I will be moving to Colorado, so the podcast episodes may not be normally scheduled until I get adjusted to my new living situation. However, the podcast is not going anywhere. I will keep everybody up to date on my Twitter page, and that is at Luna Frizzle. Thank you, and have a wonderful evening, day, wherever you are. A few quick messages before the end. The podcast is on Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, and Spotify, hopefully many others soon, and I am on Podchaser, so if you guys would go and give a review, or follow me on Twitter, @LunaFrizzle, it would be most helpful. Thank you.